News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to Hometown Heroes. Yes, I am Paul Leffler, and yes, I will have Bulldog football for you tonight. 7:30 kickoff, 5 o'clock, coverage starts with Bulldogs Live. But this show is all about honoring our veterans, World War II veterans specifically. My guest today is not a veteran. He's the son of a veteran, but he has quite the story to tell. I know you're going to love it. Before I get to Wesley Johnston, our guest today, I want to remind you, you already know, but Wednesday is Veterans Day, so make sure that you take time out to thank every veteran that you know for creating the freedom that you and I enjoy today in our country. Head to downtown Fresno for the annual Veterans Day Parade. It's the 90th anniversary parade. It gets started at 10:30, the opening ceremony at 11. Even go down beforehand to stake out your spot, and while you're at it, check out the Veterans Memorial Museum, where the volunteers will have it open at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, Veterans Day. Also, in the afternoon on Veterans Day, 4 o'clock, head on over to the Clovis Memorial Building Theater, the Clovis Veterans Memorial Theater in Clovis. At 4 o'clock, it'll be the 7th annual Tribute to Service, the premiere of some great videos put together by local volunteers honoring our veterans in our community. So that is the Tribute to Service at the Clovis Veterans Memorial Theater, 4 o'clock on Wednesday. Now, our guest today, Wesley Johnston, is not a World War II veteran. His father was, but he never got to talk to his father in detail about his service in World War II. And that has created a journey for him that I think will really captivate your attention this afternoon. Let's start with how you decided that you wanted to find out more about what your dad did in World War II, because he was no longer around when you decided this. He wasn't there for you to ask him questions about it.
Right. He died after the war. He did not die in the war, but I was only 7 years old when he died. At the 50th anniversary of D-Day, Public Broadcasting had a wonderful show on called The Fighter Pilot Story by Quentin Annenson, and he had put together this 2.5-hour documentary that was just riveting. And at the end of it, he comes on, you know, in his present gray hair state and says, you know, I did this so my kids and my grandkids would know what I did. And I thought to myself, you know, if my dad had lived, you know, and did something like this, what would it look like? And I realized the only way I'm going to ever know the answer to that is to do the research myself. I have a master's in history, so I've got the skills to do it, but, you know, I had never really attempted to do it, and that's what triggered it.
And I think that's a lot of people, when they get to that point, they say, man, I wish I really knew more. I wish I could figure out how to find out more. I think a lot of them are intimidated. You say you had that background, so maybe that helped you get past that a little bit. And what I really appreciate is what you've done since for those many other people who are trying to find that same kind of information. But where did you start? How did you start getting little bits and pieces of what your dad had done?
Well, I started with what I knew. And that's always good in genealogy, too, for example. If you start with what you've got, what you can find. My mother had put together a scrapbook. It had little bits and pieces, a pass that he had to go into Maastricht that was signed by a Captain Higgins, or no, a Lieutenant Higgins, and other bits and pieces. So I had those. I knew that he was in the 7th Armored Division. I knew that he'd ridden in a half track. I knew he'd had frozen feet, and I knew he'd been in a place called St. Vith, Belgium. And that was about the sum total of everything that I knew. So what I started doing was taking the scrapbook and going through there. And my dad worked for the Methodist Publishing Company before he went into service. He was drafted at the end of 43. And he collected church bulletins all the time during his training in the States. So this gave me pretty much a week-by-week summary of where he was. So I started making a spreadsheet, just putting in the bits and pieces that were in the scrapbook. Any place there was a date, any place there was a location, you know, just putting it in, you know, to the spreadsheet to try and put everything in order, just to understand my dad's own record of what he had done, as far as he kept it and my mother had put it in the scrapbook.
You know, you hear that analogy a lot of time, pieces to the puzzle, but that's what I'm picturing as you're talking about this. You're getting the border pieces around, and then you're starting to fill in places here and there. And before I get to more of Wes sharing this with us, I want to remind you at home, if you go to our website, kmjnow.com, I have a link there to Wesley Johnston's website, which I think if you are at all interested in finding out the history of a veteran in your family, or maybe you are a veteran and you want to find out more about where you were and what your unit did, fill in some blanks in your memory even, go and check that out. There are so many helpful hints that we're going to talk about later. But so you're getting these different pieces to the puzzle. How exciting was it? I mean, did you have this anticipation and then you'd get to a point and, whoa, that's a big nugget of information. Now I've really found something.
Yeah, a puzzle is exactly the way to look at it, and I still do. Once I had put the border in, as you said, with the spreadsheet, just to find what he had, and I had also started reading, books about World War II, looking for some of the names that were showing up. Higgins, for example, showed up in President Eisenhower's son's book, so I knew fairly quickly, within a month or so, that my dad had been right up on the front line in the Battle of the Bulge during the worst part of it.
No wonder he got frozen feet.
Yeah. And so I started putting these pieces together and with the external pieces, but also then starting to try and connect with the 7th Armored Division Association. And that was an important first step for me because there were plenty of guys. This was 1994, and there were still plenty of guys around. They had just had a trip back to Belgium in October of 1994, and so they had a list of who had been there. I called up the association secretary. My brother had been a career Army, and he had gotten that name at some point. So I called him up, and he sent me the list, and I started calling these guys on the list. And, did you know my dad? That kind of thing. And there was finally one guy that I called in Tucson, Arizona. And I asked him, did he know my dad? And he kind of took a pause and he says, we had some hard times together. And I got goosebumps.
I bet.
He proceeded to tell me, I still get goosebumps now thinking about it again. He proceeded to tell me some stories of things that they had been through. And, he knew my dad was the short story of it. Since my dad came in as a replacement, I have only found four guys who really ever knew him, only two of whom are still alive now. But that was one avenue. In addition, being a trained historian, I also wanted the documents. And so, I did the research and found out about the after-action reports at the National Archives, contacted the National Archives, found out about the morning reports in St. Louis, contacted them, just started getting as much as I possibly could about my dad's experience. In December of 1994, I had already been planning to go to Spain, and so I modified the trip to spend a week at the 50th anniversary of the Bulge, which is where my dad had been at St. Vith, Belgium. And that week was a turning point for me, especially one particular day. When you go up on the ridge line that's east of St. Vith, there are still foxholes up there. Mm-hmm. And standing in these foxholes, which I realize now that I shouldn't have been doing because there's still unexploded ordnance out there. but standing in one of those foxholes and thinking, my God, these men fought. They had to dig these foxholes with hand grenades because the ground was rock solid from the cold. And they fought for their lives in these holes in the ground. Somebody ought to know their names. Somebody ought to tell their story. And so I expanded my research to include his entire battalion. And since then, I've expanded the entire 7th Armored Division, and I'm now the association historian for the 7th Armored Division.
And I think there are a lot of other people that would like to make you their historian, too, if you only had the time to help everybody who wants your help.
Oh, I wish I did.
Well, you at home can take advantage of all the great research that Wesley Johnston has done. That Dad's War website is linked, again, at our website, kmjnow.com. And during this commercial break, maybe, you can hop over there, take a look at it, and we'll hear more of not just the story of Wesley discovering his dad's war history, but what he's done with the 7th Armored Division Association and all the different nuggets you can look at on his website. It's going to be a fascinating hour today here on Hometown Heroes. You're listening to News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Don't forget, Veterans Day is Wednesday. Make sure that you thank each and every veteran in your life for serving our country, for creating that freedom that we enjoy today. And, you know, if you are a veteran or active duty personnel, I don't know if you've heard about this, but if you go to an Applebee's restaurant, they'll give you a free entree. So I encourage you to do that, and I'm thankful for the folks at Applebee's doing that for you. I'm also very thankful to have Wesley Johnston here with me today. His story is so entertaining, and you know, you don't have to go far to find stories like this. He lives right here in Clovis, right in the middle of the Central Valley, and he has people from all over the country and all over the world asking him questions about how to find information from World War II. You heard him describe his quest to learn more about his father, who died when he was just 7 years old, and I imagine that you told us a little bit about that. It had to be pretty cathartic for you and had to be just personally so meaningful to fill in some of these blanks about a guy that you really didn't know that much of. When you lose your father at age 7, there's a lot to try to fill in.
Yeah, when you look at the pictures of him while he's in basic training and after he's been through combat, the eyes that are looking back at you are different eyes. And, you know, trying to understand what created that difference, it's been a quest.
I can imagine, and now you have a little better idea of what changed those eyes over the years. And again, if you're at home, you're listening to this, and you're thinking, I'd really like to learn more about my father's time in the war, or my grandfather, or my uncle, or my aunt even. If you want some clues as to how to develop that, go to our website, kmjnow.com, on the Paul Leffler page, and you will find a link to Wesley Johnston's website, the Dad's War website, that tells you everything you need to know. I really do mean everything you need to know. And you talked about some of the things that you found. And a lot of veterans, I think, have been in this situation where they want to get their VA benefits or whatever, and they ask a very simple question, and oftentimes they get a very simple answer. No, we don't have those records. They burned down in St. Louis. Or they'll get some variation of that. Mm-hmm. Now, is that always a dead end?
The St. Louis fire in 1973 did destroy most of the individual personnel files. There are some surnames at the latter part of the alphabet that still exist, and they have tried to reconstitute some. So I would definitely write for that, even if you think it's not there, but mm-hmm. write for it just to be sure. But if you do get back, just a small reconstituted file or saying that the file is gone, you still have a recourse because the organizational records did not burn in the fire. The morning reports that were turned in every morning that reflected the company status as of the previous day, where they were, what their strength counts were, what their personnel status changes were, and sometimes a record of events for the company. Those are on the morning reports, and the morning reports are in St. Louis. They can be retrieved through the same National Personnel Records Center. It's a little bit different kind of a query that you're going to be sending in because you're not asking for an individual record. Mm-hmm. You're asking for the morning reports. And generally, when I counsel people on the morning reports, I tell them, you know, request the entire month that you think an event happened. Mm-hmm. By an event, I mean any status, personnel status change, promotion, joining the company, going on leave, being sick, being wounded, getting promoted, anything like that. The whole month will make sure that you don't have a delayed record. Because right. quite a few times, for example, if a guy was missing, and this is exactly what happened with a lot of the guys in the Bulge, you know, they didn't know whether they were really captured or not. So they waited a few days, you know, before they filed them as MIAs to see if they showed up. So those records might show up a week later, but if you want to know where he was, you know, when he went MIA, you really need to find the record back on the date that he went MIA.
Right.
You know, the later record will say MIA as of such and such date, but if you want to know what happened on that date and where they were, you need that other record. So that's why I always tell people to get the whole month that they're looking for a specific event. But those records are in St. Louis and can be obtained. Their status is actually changing. They have technically been accessioned by the National Archives as of 2005. And the National Archives is building a state-of-the-art research building in St. Louis. It'll be the second largest National Archives building in the country. Mm-hmm. It's now slated to open in fall of 2011. The Morning Report microfilms, tens of thousands of reels of microfilm, will be physically moved over to the new facility. So technically, while they're under the auspices of the National Archives right now, physically they're still at the National Personnel Record Center, and you should contact the National Personnel Record Center to be able to get copies of the morning reports.
And all of that information that he just described is on his website, the Dad's War website, linked on our site at kmjnow.com. So if this is hitting a bell for you and saying, you know what, I need to do this, then go to that website and check it out. Now, with your father, you mentioned you got involved with the 7th Armored Division Association. I know since then you've also become involved with the Survivors of the Battle of the Bulge group. Do you have any kind of estimate on how many different people that you've been able to help through just your research and what you've learned about doing research? Can you even put a number on that?
I have never tried. I just do what I do, and I'm very touched that people are positively affected by what I do and benefit from it, you know, but I don't try and keep a count. You know, sure. I get emails every week from people saying, you've changed my life, you know. And sometimes when I go to the reunions, there'll be people there. There was a woman at the 7th Armored Division reunion in Columbus in September that I had never met, but I provided her information about her dad who was killed in France. And she said, I came to this reunion to see you.
Wow.
And you changed my life, and I want to thank you. And, you know, that kind of stuff keeps me going. It does get difficult at times to keep it going. But like I said, you know, every day is Memorial Day, and every day is Veterans Day for me. So.
Well, and something like that makes it all feel worthwhile, I'm sure. You talk about being at those reunions and getting an email like that or a comment like that from someone in person. Do you ever wish you could clone yourself about 10 times so you could do 10 times the work? Because it's hard. I mean, you have the website there to educate all these other people, but still sometimes it's one thing to read it, it's another thing to do it. Don't you wish you could just have 10 of you to do all of this?
I could have 100.
Yeah.
And it would still be a challenge because there's just so many aspects of this. They took me back in the stacks a couple of times at the National Archives when I've been over there in College Park, Maryland, is where the World War II records are at. And it's just staggering how much paper there is. And I think we probably have really only seen about 5% of what there is to see about World War II. I mean, there's a tremendous amount published. But, you know, I've found things over there. Well, for example, about the Battle at Metz, I found a translation of a captured German document, and I came home and I looked through all of the books, and I've got all of the books about the Battle at Metz. Not one of the bibliographies had referenced this document. You know, it was the story of the Battle of Metz, the first days from the German point of view. You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff there, hidden away in all those boxes of paper stacked up in the archives.
Well, it really is like being a treasure hunter, an archaeologist. I mean, you're digging through. You think about it, there are 16 million Americans who served in World War II. That's just one country involved in the war. All these different battles, and all the militaries were keeping records. So there's just a mountain of stuff to pour through. What do you think in all of this research, is there maybe one thing that stands out that was like the mother lode, the hope diamond, if you will, the big treasure that once you found it, you said, wow, I can't believe that I uncovered this and that I found this when maybe you weren't even looking for it, but that just really was that eureka moment?
There have been a lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, well, finding the morning reports and finding how really important they are for understanding battles, which is the exact opposite of what the National Personnel Records Center website says. They say, you know, these have no information about
you don't really
battles.
Want these.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They are a bunch of administrators. They're not historians. They're clerks. That's why I'm glad that the National Archives is now moving in and taking these over, but it'll be years before that's completed. But, yeah, when I researched, for example, there was a monument dedicated in Holland in 2007. It took me 3 years to find 47 names of the guys who were killed in that area, and I told them, leave some blank space because I know as I get more records, I'm going to find more names, and now there's 50 I've found. Mm. A lot of people think, oh, the Army's got all this stuff nicely organized. You know, you just call up and they'll tell you everything you need to know. The Army was not in the business of doing things for historical purposes other than for learning lessons for future battles. There was an information and historical service that did do combat interviews, and those are in the National Archives as well, of guys after key battles, especially mm-hmm. the Battle of the Bulge. But again, it was mainly for learning lessons. What can we do better the next time? The morning reports existed so that they would have a record of, you know, what their strength counts were so they'd know what their replacement needs were. The after-action reports, you know, all of these things that we treasure now as telling the story really were there for the purpose of destroying the enemy is what they were there for. That's
well, and I guess
job.
In a wartime, that is your number one priority, right?
Yeah. And even after the war, the recovery of remains, the return of remains to the United States, you know, all of that stuff, it was frustrating to a lot of the families because the Army was still in the business of being the Army, you know, and, mm-hmm. and this was sort of a secondary aspect of what the Army did, and it really did get a secondary status. There's a lot of honoring of the guys who were killed, but the families really felt a lot of neglect, I think, after the war. And it's because the Army is there for one purpose, and whatever doesn't fit that purpose, you know, that's why people can't just call up, you know, towns call me from all over Europe and say, who liberated us? Who are the names of our liberators? And, you know, it takes years to answer that question. You can't just call up the Army and say, who liberated us, you know?
Well, and you might have different claims from different people on some of those, too. And oftentimes, I know that's the case. It's about time to take another commercial break. But when we come back, I want to ask you more about that monument in Holland, because I know you're not looking to draw attention to yourself about it. It kind of slid on by, but I think our listeners would be interested. And more than anything, I hope that folks at home, if you're listening today and you've been frustrated trying to find information about your own service or about the service of one of your relatives, that you'll find some hope today in what Wesley Johnston is sharing with us, and that you won't give up in that quest to discover some of that long-lost information, because a lot of times it's out there and you just have to know how to find it. So Wesley Johnston will tell us more about that when we come back. It's Hometown Heroes on Newstalk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. A little different twist today, not with a World War II veteran, but the son of a World War II veteran who has made it his life's quest in the last couple decades to learn more about his father's service during World War II. His dad died when he was just 7 years old. But Wesley Johnston, I think, will tell you that he has found out more than he ever expected to, not just about his dad, but many other veterans of World War II, many units, divisions of the United States military, and opposing military, for that matter. Is that the case? Would you say that you've ended up discovering a lot more than you probably set out to?
Absolutely. Yeah, and in fact, when you mentioned the opposing military, I found out that 7th Armored Division killed a distant cousin of my father. My father, like a third of the American Army, including Eisenhower, had German ancestry. And one of his cousins was fighting at Melun, France, before my dad joined the 7th Armored Division and was killed there.
And there are so many families who have stories like that, and you don't hear a lot about that, but that there were. But so your father's unit killed a distant cousin of his. And things like that are the things that you can find if you take the time to do it. In a moment, we're going to walk through step by step from Wesley Johnston's website, the Dad's War website, which is linked on our page at kmjnow.com. But you mentioned something a few minutes ago about a memorial in Holland. And all throughout Europe, whether you're in Belgium or France or Luxembourg or Holland or wherever, you'll find these monuments to men from World War II who liberated that town or who won a battle here. How did they find you, and how did you get the task of deciding whose names were going to go on this monument?
Well, it's mainly through the website that the first ones found me. The first monument that I worked on was near Chartres, France, in 1996 or thereabouts. And he found me through the website. It was a local French historian, and they had found the remains of three Americans who had been killed that had been buried in the local cemetery north of Chartres. And two of the guys they could identify, the third one was inconnu, unknown, and they wanted me to identify the guy, and I did. And in fact, that just happened again a couple of months ago. The city of Nangy, France, has a monument to two unknown Americans that were killed in August of 1944. And they sent, the group that had done the monument sent me an email through a guy who could write in English. And he asked me, do you know who these guys were? And within minutes, because of a letter that I'd received 8 years before from a veteran and had been working on, I put the two pieces together.
Wow.
And there's going to be a dedication next August of that monument with a new plaque.
That is incredible. And boy, that has to be a feeling. When you've had this sitting in your files for 8 years, you say, could it possibly be? No way. Could it really be? And then you put the two papers side by side. Yeah, it's really him. I mean, that had to be incredible.
Yeah. And it like I said, it only took minutes because I couldn't do this without a computer.
But. Well, sure. And if they had the computers then that we have now, you wouldn't have as much work to do. But I know you enjoyed doing it. So you've become, I guess, the expert. If a European city is looking to make sure all the right names are on a monument, you're the guy they come to now.
Well, for the 7th Armored Division.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not up to doing it for anybody else. It's enough work just for the 7th Armored.
Yeah. I believe it. You never know how many phone calls you're going to get on that. Well, what a privilege I know for you, and what a blessing to those people that you were able to get it right. And it's important to get it right. And I think so many veterans that are on this program feel that way, and I think a lot of our listeners want to get it right when it comes to their family members who served in the military. So if they go to your website, the Dad's War website, you start out, and it's very linear. It goes top to bottom. You can scroll all the way through and read all the different instructions. What's the basic thing that they need to do if they're looking for some records, if they want some information? Where do they start?
I have a section that I call the first step section, which is right at the top of the page. And, you know, that's really where they need to start. And it splits off into two main groups. One is for the guys, you know, the families of the guys who are killed. The other is for the ones who survived or were killed. The ones who were killed actually because of the fire in St. Louis have more records because those records are stored in Virginia, the individual deceased personnel files, the mortuary records. So, you know, I have information about how to obtain those records. In addition, for the ones who are still MIA, the Army is collecting mitochondrial DNA from family members, and so I've got a link about that on the webpage. So there's specific stuff that for the guys who are killed that needs to be there. But then for both them and for the ones who survived, there's another section. The first step that I've got is positively to identify his unit.
Right.
Now, for most guys, this is going to be either through patches, you know, that he has in his collection or that you see in his pictures. You can see a patch on his shoulder, you know, that would tell what unit he was in, or through their discharge papers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they were discharged, they were told that they had to keep these because they were never going to be supplied a replacement if they lost it or if it was destroyed. And they were encouraged to go record these. It's just like you record a deed for buying a house. These guys took their papers, their discharge and separation records, to the recorder's office in the county courthouse, and had these legally recorded, so that if for some reason their originals were lost, that they had this legal record that verified that they had their service. If you can't find the discharge papers in his documents, you know, then the courthouse is a place to look, wherever he came back to. Another option is if he ever applied for VA benefits, look in the phone book, call the 800 number for the VA, tell them you're the next of kin and that you want to get copies of all of your dad's records for, you know, the VA, including his discharge paper that he would have had to submit to prove eligibility. You know, so you want to get his unit. And when I say get his unit, you want to get it to as low a level as possible, preferably the company. In general, the discharge papers are going to give his battalion and his company if he's Army. Mm-hmm. So that will work. Now, in some cases, after the war ended in Europe, these guys were shuffled around because of, you know, the number of points they had, which was based pretty much on how long they'd been in service over there, so that the high point guys could come home sooner.
Right.
Sometimes a guy got shipped home with a different unit, and that shows up on his discharge papers. So you got to look carefully, you know, at the records to see which unit he was actually in combat with. From most of the guys, even if they came home with another unit, you know, they still insisted that they get their combat unit on their discharge. But at any rate, that's the first step, is finding out what unit he was in, what division, what battalion or regiment or company.
Absolutely. You know. The finer detail you can get, the better. And then, because that's what's going to open you up to getting all those morning reports and after action reports and knowing that they're actually relevant to what he did and where he was.
That's exactly right. The after action reports are at the battalion level and at the division level and at the corps level and at the Army level for that matter. But they don't go down below the battalion level. This is where the morning reports are absolute gold. They are the only records that still exist that go to the company level. And especially for units like an engineer battalion or a cavalry reconnaissance squadron or a tank destroyer battalion that were typically farmed out, you know, a company attached to this regiment, a company attached to that combat command, you know, where the battalion headquarters didn't really have knowledge of what the individual companies were doing.
Right.
The records that show up in the morning reports are the only records in some cases of what that company did. You know, so that's why you have to know what company he was in. If you only know his battalion, you can still request the morning reports, but you're going to have to look in every company. And depending on...
You have to take more of a shotgun approach.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of detail. So the more you can pin that down, the better off you're going to be. I'm curious, when you talk about the morning reports, is it plausible to have a veteran come to you and say, you know, I was wounded, and I remember it was about this time of year, and this is where we were, but I haven't been able to get a record of it. I've never gotten a Purple Heart. I can't prove it to anybody. Is that something that a morning report would potentially yield if they were able to find it? Or is it just all dependent on whether or not someone actually knew he got injured? And if they didn't know, then he's out of luck anyway.
No, typically, I mean, the morning reports are not perfect, but they were very good because they were turned in on the spot at the time. And so generally, if a guy was wounded and they knew he'd been wounded, I mean, I've seen them even there, you know, where somebody was wounded but remained on duty, but they'll note it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that would be there. You know, so you definitely want to get the morning report. And even if you didn't get the Purple Heart, the morning report should be what you can then use to say, look, I was wounded in action here. You know, I deserve a Purple Heart.
And I think for some veterans, and I've seen it on this program, how cathartic it can be for veterans to talk about their experiences. I think for some of them, too, if they did experience something that they don't have any records of, to get that record, to have that black and white proof in their hand, really kind of makes them feel good. To be able to show other people, you know what, I'm not making this up. This actually happened, and here's the proof. And that, you know, it seems like it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but it can be a huge deal to some of these veterans. And I'm sure you've seen stuff like that through your research.
Well, and I've sent some of this stuff to guys, and, you know, it had the name of the town where they were at, and he says, you know, I had no idea where we were. They just say, go here and dig a hole, go there and dig a hole. Sure. I didn't know where we were. You know, now I know for the first time after 60 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. What a blessing. We need to catch our final commercial break, but there is still plenty more to cover with Wesley Johnston and all his years of research on World War II, helping so many veterans and their families find closure, fill in some blanks, and just really know infinitely more about what happened during that time in these individual units. We're going to take our final break, then come back with Wesley Johnston. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
All right, we're going to get right back to it here on Hometown Heroes. Wesley Johnston has quite a bit of information that he would like to share with you. If you are in that quest like he was to find out about a loved one's service during World War II, maybe you're even a veteran who would like to fill in some of those blanks, and like we talked about moments ago, you didn't know where you were when you were doing this or that. You were in a war zone. That's all you knew. He has some step-by-step instructions on his website. The Dad's War website is linked on our page at kmjnow.com. And you discussed first figuring out what unit that veteran was in, get down to the smallest level you can, company level will yield those morning reports. Once you figure that out, you don't want to go willy-nilly requesting this and that. I guess you probably want to maximize your time and target it a little more than that.
Well, you do need to do some overlap because some of these processes are going to take months. Getting the morning reports is going to take 6 to 9 months, you know, and you may actually need to contact your congressman if they don't cooperate in St. Louis, which unfortunately I have run into sometimes. Getting the after-action reports from the National Archives could take you months. But, well, let's go to the second step here. I mean, once you know what unit he was in, get on the Internet. And I've got links on my website, you know, and find out if there's an association for his unit. Because there are a bunch of different reasons why you should definitely be a member of this association. You know, the guys who he fought with are there. Their website may have history. They may have a published history. They have reunions, you know, just all kinds of
reasons. It's going to give you a pretty good shortcut to this information that you're looking for because they've already done a lot of the work.
Yeah, specific information about him
right.
and his unit. That's the second step. The third step is once you've gotten in touch with the association, you're probably going to start getting names of guys that were in his company or in his battalion. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying here is use the telephone. The mail's too slow. These guys have trouble writing in a lot of cases. I have had situations where I've called up and they said, you missed him by a month. He's gone now. You know, so use the phone. You know, don't be bashful. These guys, most of them are glad to be able to talk about something, you know, that was specific, you know, with somebody they knew. So that's the third step. The fourth step is where you really then start getting into requesting the records. Starting out with the battalion level records of the after action reports, because that's the easiest one and the one that's easiest to get as well. The National Archives in College Park, Maryland, it's National Archives 2 is what it's called. Has all of the World War II records, and what you do is you write to them and just say, you know, National Archives, you know, and I've got the address on the webpage, and you just write to them and, you know, say, send me an inventory of all of the records that you've got that were created by the 38th Armored Infantry Battalion, the 7th Armored Division,
right.
whatever unit you're looking for. They will send you back an inventory, and then you can tell them, you know, I would like you to send me copies of these specific ones. You send that back to them, then they send you a form on which they estimate how much that each one of these copies will pay, and it's reasonable and it's definitely well worth the money.
Well, it's going to be worth it because this is priceless information you're getting
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so then you put your credit card number on the form and sign the authorization and send it back to them. The whole process for the after-action reports takes somewhere on the order of about 3 months. It's a lot more efficient than the morning reports. And the people there are historians, and at the National Archives, I mean, handling the after-action reports. And they do a whole lot better job than St. Louis does.
They won't send you a record from the Pacific when you're asking for something from the European theater.
No.
You'll get what you're asking
for.
Yeah.
And they've done a good job of inventorying what they have, too. So, you know, it's that's why I say the first step is to ask for that inventory. They will not do research for you, though. That's one thing to be, I want to make very clear. When you're asking for this inventory, they will send you that because they've already made that inventory.
Right.
You send it to them and they will do the copying, but they're not going to be looking through for individual documents or something like that. The next step is where you get down to the company level, and specifically, these are the records that are most likely to actually mention you as a veteran or your veteran, you know, if you're a family member.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the morning reports. And, you know, we've talked about these, you know, and they're an absolute gold mine. But the people in St. Louis are staffed as if they were purely personnel records. And even then, they really don't do a very good job. I just have to say it. I mean,
sure. Don't expect to have it overnight. It's going to take some time, and you might have to be persistent to get it.
Well, you might, you know, you might wait 6 months and then get back this bureaucratic letter that has nothing to do with your request.
Right.
You know, if that's the case, that's when it's appropriate to contact your congressman. I've worked with Congressman Nunes since I live in Clovis, and Brittany Sola has done a wonderful job, helped me out. And I've also spoken with Kelly Gill from Congressman Costa's office, because another hat that I wear is I'm the president of the American World War II Association Historians Consortium, which is 11 different units, 10, four armored divisions, six infantry divisions, and the veterans of the Battle of the Bulge historian. And we've got things that we want to see done about the preservation of World War II records that we need to have congressional involvement. And that's why I've been talking to Kelly. But, yeah, she does a very good job, too. So the morning reports, when you get those, all of these records are going to be dealing in government or army speak, you know, so it's going to take a little bit of getting used to. And that's where we get into step six, is because you do need to get some understanding, you know, of the records and of the Army and or the Navy, if that's what you're going for.
Right.
And so in step six, you know, I originally started doing this back in 1995, I think it was, as workshops. I developed chronic fatigue and had to abandon the workshops, but I have kept the workshop book up to date. Mm-hmm. And so you can buy the workshop book, and I additionally list five other books that I think are very excellent books that are very well worth having.
And can people buy that on your website? Do they have to write you a letter? How can they buy your workshop
book? The workshop book, there is a link there, I think. Yeah, there is a link there. You know, if you click on where it says buy my workshop book, it'll take you to the page that has that. There are links for the other ones. For example, the Touchstones book, which is the American World War II Orphans Network, which is children of soldiers who were killed in the war.
Right.
It'll take you to the AWON website to buy that book. The other ones, two of them are out of print now, which is unfortunate because they're both excellent books. How to Locate Anyone Who Is or Has Been in the Military and the World War II Military Records. Lieutenant Colonel Johnson and his daughter, Deborah Johnson Knox, wrote these books, and they're excellent books, but they are out of print. So I've got links to the Amazon website where you can get used copies of those. And then the most recent book that's come out, which is a 2006 book, which is called Finding Your Fathers by Jonathan Gaughan. It's specifically Army, but it's an excellent book, and, you know, definitely one that you should get if you want to get into more depth.
And the bottom line is, if you're listening, and maybe you've even felt like you've wasted a lot of time trying to find information and come up empty, by going to Wesley Johnston's website, you're going to save yourself a lot of time. You're going to get pointed in the right direction, and those resources he just talked about are going to help you out a lot in your quest. We're just about out of time here, but I'm wondering how long you're going to keep doing this, because you seem to have plenty of enthusiasm for it.
The spirit is willing, but sometimes the flesh is weak. I've found the source of the chronic fatigue, which was a root canal that I'd had done, and that's been surgically repaired. But, uh-huh. I still, during the winters, go into a hibernation mode, and, but I will do this as long as I'm physically able to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think I can speak for all the veterans and veterans' families listening when I say thank you for doing what you are doing, for all that you have done, and we look forward to some more great discoveries that you're going to make.
Well, thank you.
That's Wesley Johnston, our guest today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another edition of Hometown Heroes. Football bumps us off next week, but thanks for listening today on News Talk 580 KMJ.